Well, welcome to our spa studio here as part of the Yahwa blog. We're here today to continue our series on Muhammad's criminal enterprise. It will be part five of that series. For those who may be joining us partway through the episodes, it is important to know that Islam was not conceived as a religion. The first year, first day, first month of that, the epic that is called the Islamic era, begins with the Pledge of Aqaba. That Pledge of Aqaba reads, "We pledge to wage war against all mankind." Once Muhammad left Kaabaville, whether you want to pretend that it was Mecca or you know that it was Petra, in shame, he became nothing more than a sand pirate, although a exceedingly sadistic one with some very perverted tendencies in terms of his sexuality. And it's important, therefore, for us to expose exactly what the earliest hadith, which are all reports from Muhammad and his companions, the only way to know what Muhammad actually said and did, and Quran, and in this case, there's an entire surah on this particular episode, which is called the Battle of Badr. So it's essential that we know what actually occurred during Islam's beginnings. The more that is known about the religion, the more readily people who are moral, informed, rational, and compassionate will be in their ability to use words wielded wisely to constrain the carnage that this religion continues to impose. And therefore, we are examining precisely what can be known about Muhammad, the origins of the Quran and the Hadith, the very formation of the religion of Islam. What I'm sharing with you is irrefutable. It's not my opinion of Islam. It is Muhammad's actual denunciation, really, of the religion that that he started. Everything you're going to hear is from Muhammad, his companions, or from his wannabe God. So as we proceed, understand that in the episodes that have preceded this, Muhammad admitted that Badr was not a confrontation between military foes to defend the upstart religion of Islam. All Badr represented was Muhammad's armed mujahideen being motivated to attack a civilian caravan that was not protected by any military establishment that posed no threat to Muhammad, and their entire motivation was to steal. They were interested in abducting men for ransom, for killing those who had mocked Muhammad's recitals, and in plundering the caravan. Because, you see, Muslims didn't work. They were, at best, parasites, and at worst, they were pirates. They stole what belonged to others. The only work that can be attributed to the first Muslims is terrorism and, well, criminal enterprise, where they went off to rob and enslave others to garner more weapons so they could attack ever larger and more frequent prey. Again, these are not my interpretations of Islam. This is not cherry-picking the worst out of a sea of wonderful and uplifting hadith and Quran surahs. It is Islam. This is all there is to Islam. If it weren't for lies and killing, Islam simply would not exist. There would be no Quran. And in this particular case, I'm going to be thorough, as I have been throughout goddamn religion. It is five volumes and 4,200 pages for a reason. Every surah in the Quran is presented in its entirety, and every pertinent hadith relative to Muhammad's early days, like Muhammad's entire life from the time that he claims he had his first revelation all the way through his death, are all presented. There are no situations here where we have shortchanged a reader by not conveying everything that can be known. In this particular case, we're going to be reading from Ishaq. It's the surah of Allah's Messenger, the life of Allah's Messenger. It was translated by Ghulim, published by Oxford University Press. We'll commence this on page 301. This particular hadith is also shared in exactly the same words in Tabari's Tariq, which is history. And that will be volume 7, page 56. It was translated and published by the New York State University Press, SUNY Press. It reads, Muhammad picked up a handful of pebbles and he faced the Quraysh. Now, the Quraysh were not an army. They were not foreign adversaries. The Quraysh were nothing more than Muhammad's extended family. They were the custodians of the Kaaba. They were the ones who, well, they are the ones that promoted virtually every Islamic ritual. The Quraysh, long before Muhammad was born, conducted the pilgrimage, the Hajj. They were the ones who sponsored circumambulating the Kaaba. They were the ones who made the Kaaba a rock shrine to rock gods. The prostration prayer was of Quraysh origins. Yeah, every important aspect of Islam was conceived and managed, promoted by the Quraysh before Muhammad was born. So these are the custodians of Allah's Kaaba and of the religion of Islam when it was pagan. And they were all relatives of Muhammad and his gang of goons. These were family. Before Muhammad attacked and perpetrated genocide on Jews, he first made his own extended family his foe. This was an exceedingly wretched man. So he threw pebbles. He was, mind you, he was in the back. He was too old and portly, feeble to fight. And so they made him a little palm frond hut in the back. And it's alleged that he picked up some pebbles and threw them in the direction of the Quraysh, kind of what you'd expect a sissy boy to do in a fight in a sandbox that is too scared to even get in the sandbox with the other kids. He shouted, "May their faces be deformed." Yeah, that's lovely, isn't it? He's talking now to his extended family. "May their faces be deformed." He threw pebbles at them and he ordered his companions to attack. Yep, Muhammad ordered Muslims to fight and kill. The foe was routed, is what he said. Now, the foe was nothing but a bunch of intoxicated merchants that, well, Muhammad missed the caravan, which was his primary target, according to Muhammad, even according to Allah. And the merchants that had been sent out to protect the caravan, most of them had gone home. There was a group that said, "Hey, you know, we're already out here. It's a festive time of year. It's Ramadan." Oh, by the way, Ramadan was pagan long before it was Islamic. And they were said, "We'll go ahead and we'll celebrate Ramadan. We'll have some cocktails. We'll get some dancing girls. We'll have a good time before we go back home." And that was the state that Muhammad's goons found them when they attacked them and routed their own family. Now, this then reads, Allah killed the Quraysh. Now, even though what we have read is that Muslim swords were wielded against their own family members, we now have the Islamic God, or the ungod of Islam, claiming that he killed the Quraysh. He killed the Quraysh. Allah killed the Quraysh chiefs and caused many of their nobles to be taken captives. There were no nobles and there were no chiefs at this point. There was just a ragtag group, even by the own Islamic accounting, that wanted to party hardy. While they and taken captive, that's just the same what happened on 10/7, where Jews were abducted by Muslims. While the Muslims were taking prisoners, the messenger, this reads, was in his hut, end quote. So Muhammad and his spirit were clearly demonic, the personification of evil. It's amazing that even in Arabia, there was room for two narcissists and psychopaths of this ilk. And of course, it is troubling here, and a bit of gamesmanship, I suppose, with this psychological issue of Allah being credited with the killing and the kidnapping, as opposed to the Muslims who were actually perpetrating it. I mock Muslims all the time. I've had thousands of death threats, and what I constantly tell the Muslims who perpetrate them, so if your Allah is so Akbar, if he's greater than any other god, then surely he knows where I am, and surely he has the capability of doing what he wants to do to me, so why don't you just sic your God on me, rather than yourselves coming and doing your ungod's dirty business and proving that I'm right about you. This is the very thing that is going on here. Allah was credited with the killing and the kidnapping. It wasn't, of course, Muhammad and his militants. No, they weren't murdering thieves. Their God was. Is that better? Bukhari. This is the most revered collection of hadith in Islam. It's because it's topical. And the fact that it's topical, Muslims can read the sections that they want to read without actually coming to know Muhammad as he really was, because the other two hadith collections that I have shared with you so far in this program and throughout this whole series are chronological. They are set into the context of time and Muhammad's life so that you can actually rearrange the Quran chronologically and set it into that context and understand it for the first time. And since that is so devastating to Islam, most Muslims prefer Bukhari because it is not chronological or contextual. It is simply by subject matter. This is book 5 or volume 5, book 59, number 290. The Prophet said, the unbelievers who failed to join the Ghazwa of, or says the believers who failed to join the Ghazwa of Badr, and those who took part in it were not equal in reward. So in Islam, you are only rewarded if you are a killer and kidnapper. That is the only rational deduction that can be deduced from these words. If you didn't participate in an act of armed robbery where family members were killed by extended family members, men were abducted, and others were robbed, then you are not a Muslim of high standing. Clearly, Muhammad loved murderers. He even loved their weapons. Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 333. Az Zubair said, I attacked him with my spear and I pierced his eye. I put my foot over his body to pull the weapon out. But even when I did so, I had to use great force. Later on, Allah's apostle asked me for that spear and I gave it to him. Well, show me your treasure and I will reveal your soul. Ishaq 301, Tabari 7, page 56. As the Muslims were laying their hands on as many prisoners as they could catch, there's no prisoners here. This is simply abduction for the purpose of ransom. As they could catch, the Prophet said, I have been told, saw disapproval in the face of Sa'd. He said, why are you upset by the taking of captives? Sa'd replied, this was the first defeat inflicted by Allah on the infidels. Slaughtering the prisoners would have been more pleasing to me than sparing them. You get that? So as the Muslims were trying to round up captives. These are people whose crime was that they knew Muhammad and therefore they didn't believe him. I mean, the Quran's quite clear. It's the single most repeated theme in the Quran. Those who knew Muhammad best recognized that he was a demon-possessed liar who was plagiarizing the work of other religions and twisting it to serve his agenda, and that he was a complete fraud, and therefore they mocked him, as should anyone who actually reads what this man said and did. And so their crime now was, rather than going back home, they were having a party. And while they had a party, Muhammad's armed mujahideen, his jihadists, descended upon them and killed some, although Allah took credit for the killing, and the others they were rounding up as captives. So Muhammad looked, and his most belligerent, most immoral, clearly the most sadistic, and this was a pudgy man too, of Muhammad's militants said that he was sad. He was disappointed. Now, he wasn't disappointed that the first Muslims were out on a raid to plunder extended family members. He wasn't bothered that Islam was now a criminal enterprise. He wasn't bothered the least bit about murder. He was just bothered that they were taking captives as opposed to killing people. This was the first defeat, if you will, it said very clearly, inflicted by Allah on the infidels. So Saad was displeased that lives were spared. He wanted everyone dead. Now, I have said repeatedly that Islam is a death cult. I have said this because the evidence is irrefutable. Now, remember these hateful words and who spoke them. We have not heard the last of Saad. He will soon condemn Jews to his preferred fate. He was, after all, a very good Muslim. In a lengthy hadith from Abd al-Rahman, one of the butchers of Nakla, we hear Ishaq, page 302, and Tabari, page, or volume 7, page 60. Umayyah was a friend of mine in Mecca. See, these were friends, fighting friends. My name was Abd Amir. But when I became a Muslim, I was called Abd al-Rahman. Now, this militant was renamed after the first Islamic god. As such, it is a stinging repudiation of Islam's first pillar, which is there's no god but Allah, because al-Rahman is the god of the early surahs in the Quran. There are surahs devoted to al-Rahman. Al-Rahman was the principal deity of the Yemenite Arabs who were converts to Judaism. It is absolute proof that Muhammad not only stole his scriptures, his Quran recitals, but he stole pagan gods to be part of Islam too. So this hadith demonstrates two things. One is that there were multiple gods in Islam. You also have Manat, Al-Uzza, and Alat. You have the rabbi, who is the Lord. You have al-Rahman, and there are three different names for Allah, which Allah is not one of them. There's Al-Laha, Al-Lahu, and Al-Lahi. So lots of different gods in Islam. Ishaq 302, Tabari, volume 7, page 60. Umayyah used to meet me when we were in Mecca, and he would say, Abd Amir, do you dislike the name that your father gave to you? I would reply, yes. Umayyah would then say, I do not recognize al-Rahman as a god, so adopt a name that I can call you when we meet. After some chatter, the friends turned enemies by Islam settled on a name. Well then, you are Abd al-Ilah, slave to the god. I agreed. Now, this line confirms the single most fatal charge that can be leveled against Islam. The Arabic word for God is Allah, not Allah. Like Ar-Rahman, Allah was the personal name of a rock god idol that became one of Islam's gods. Allahu Akbar, therefore, is not God is great, because it is not Allah. Akbar. Or, in fact, Akbar, of course, means greater, doesn't mean great. And Allah is the name of one of Islam's gods, not the word for God, which is Allah. They're written differently. Now, this simple conversation obliterates Muhammad's credibility, the Quran's authority, and Islam's legitimacy, since Ar-Rahman and Allah, more correctly, Allahu, Allahi, and Allaha, as well as Ilahi, were the names used throughout the Quran and Hadith. Islam's central claim is therefore invalid. Neither Allah nor Ar-Rahman are Yahweh. And since the Islamic duo are incompatible by name and character with Yahweh, the many misrepresentations of the Torah are nothing but crass and crude plagiarism. The tradition continues, giving us an up-and-close personal insight into what Islam did to a man's mind and to corrupt his soul. Fair warning. I need a adult supervision at this point, because this isn't pretty. Tabari 7, page 59, and Ishaq, page 303. On the day of Badr, I passed Umayyah, as he was standing with his son Ali, holding his hand. I had with me some of the coats of mail which I had taken as plunder. Umayyah said, "Abd al-Illah, would you like to take me as a prisoner? I will be more valuable to you as a captive to be ransomed than the coats of mail that you are carrying." I said, "Yes." "Come here then." I flung away the armor and I bound Umayyah and his son Ali, taking them with me. Now, according to Muhammad and his God, kidnapping for ransom was a legitimate, in fact, valued and appreciated religious practice, one more profitable than stealing armor. And in case you're wondering, the Quraysh merchant surrendered because he didn't want the Muslims to mutilate and murder his son. But it didn't work out that way. Tabari 759, Ishaq 303. People, Muslim militants, encircled us, Abd al-Rahman and his captives. Then they restrained us physically. One of the Muslims drew his sword and he struck Ali in the leg, severing it so that he fell down. Umayyah gave a scream like that of which I have never heard. I said, "Save yourself, for there is no escape for your son. By Allah, I cannot save him from these men." Then the Muslims hacked Ali to pieces. Abd al-Rahman used to say, "May Allah have mercy on Bayl, the slave-turned-Muslim murderer. I lost my coats of mail, and he deprived me of my captives." This is Islam's beginning. This is the war that made a prophet. Without Badr, there is no Islam. In trying to hype their terrorist dogma, the practitioners of Islam harpooned it. They not only demoted their gods to pagan status, they exposed their immoral motives. Islam was all about money. And while that should have been enough to impugn the doctrine, the fatal blow was in the last paragraph. Muhammad so corrupted these men that they mutilated a child in front of his father. It's exactly what Muslims did on 10/7 of 23 in Israel. Time and again, they mutilated children while their bound parents were forced to watch. There is no sense of guilt here, no glimmer of remorse or humanity. His only sadness was over lost booty. I shouldn't have to say anything more for you to understand that Islam is a blight on all humankind, a deadly plague that must be stopped. But I will continue. This evil curse that is Islam must be exposed, condemned, and quarantined. Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 297. The Prophet faced the Kaaba, and he evoked evil on the Quraysh, people specifically cursing Shaiba, Utba, Walid, and Abu Jahl. I bear witness by Allah that I saw them all dead, putrefied by the sun, as Badr was a very hot day. Muhammad swore by the very Kaaba that the Quraysh had maintained and turned into a religious shrine, replete with the Hajj pilgrimage and circumambulation and prostration prayer. And he invoked evil on the innocent people he was bludgeoning to death. Islam's not just a death cult, it's demonic. Lo, with these words, with evil proliferating, with people lying, with men dying, with bodies putrefying, I bear witness Allah was omnipresent, encompassing everything. The ungod and non-prophet were a pair of delusional psychopaths among ruthless savages. So what else could possibly go wrong? Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 397. Allah's apostle raised his head after bowing the first rak'ah, one of the prostration prayer performances. Of the morning prayer, he said, O Allah, curse so-and-so and so-and-so. After he had invoked evil upon the Quraysh, Allah revealed, means this is a Quran surah, your Lord, Rabbi, will send thousands of angels riding upon chargers, sweeping down as a form of good tidings to reassure you that victory comes from him. He will cut off parts of the unbelievers. He will overthrow them and turn them back in their frustration. Quran 3, 124. Now, mind you, the third surah wasn't delivered at this time, not even close. It was the eighth surah that was revealed at this time. There were no angels. They were just Muhammad's goons. Disgusting jihadists, torturing children, bludgeoning men to death, relishing, celebrating sadistic carnage, plundering, stealing, abducting, all while being religious. And even then, the Islamic God is so sadistic, so demonic, he wants to be credited for the mutilations. How about that for not taking responsibility? Nah, just because my sword's all bloody, it wasn't me. No. It was the angels from heaven that mutilated that child. when progressives marched in the streets with Muslims. This is what I think of. It turns my stomach that they could be so grossly immoral, ignorant, and irrational. Hypocritical, really. It was the Islamic version of kindness. The good news was that the Muslim angels, like Muslim men, were mutilating innocent people, cutting off body parts as a form of torture before engaging in mass murder. And then to crown their glorious victory over humanity and decency, they celebrated their sadistic behavior by claiming that Islam's God was forgiving and kind. In this light, I challenge anyone to rationally deny that Allah is Satan and that Muhammad was demon-possessed. I dare anyone to say that the plague they perpetrated as Islam should be allowed to survive. Islam is the most universally demented and destructive, dehumanizing and degrading, deplorable and deadly dogma ever perpetrated against humankind. And if some nitwit out there said, "Yo, you can't say that of 2 billion Muslims," why hell not? This is Islam. There is no one other than Muhammad. This is Muhammad and the first Muslims. This is their scripture. And soon you will find that the Quran says exactly the same story. There is nothing else to Islam. This is the religion of Islam. If you want to pretend that those who don't know diddly squat about Islam, who have been completely deceived about Islam, and yet still call themselves Muslims, represent the religion, then you're an ignoramus. The religion itself, as perpetrated by good Muslims, all of whom are killers and terrorists, according to the Quran, according to this very example, which they are ordered to follow, is deadly, it is deceitful, it is destructive, it is demonic. It is responsible for everything that happened on 10/7/23 in Israel. It is responsible for the genocide against Jews in Arabia. It is responsible for the 100 million lives that they butchered and stole in the first 100 years of this religion. This is Islam. There is no other Islam. Not just this day or 9/11, not just 10/7. But every day for the past 1,400 years, Muslims with their words and their actions have demonstrated that they are a curse on the planet, a malignant mutation that is, quite frankly, unsurvivable. There were only two reasons for this savage attack. These men didn't capitulate and surrender their souls to Satan, and they had not been, and they had, as a result, remained productive. And that's why they were robbed and killed. These conclusions are not opinions because they are based on the evidence. They are not the product of Islamophobia, but rather the opposite, an act of conscience demonstrating considerable courage, character, and compassion. This is not my view of Islam. It is theirs. These are their scriptures and their legacy. Now, I understand that progressives don't like evidence and reason. They're allergic to them because evidence and reason very seldom fits their agenda, their platitudes. But all they have left is ad hominem attacks to label the person who is bringing you the truth Islamophobic. I will tell you for certain, one cannot fear Islam and expose and condemn Islam. Somebody needs to be rational occasionally. Someone needs to be moral occasionally. Someone must risk their lives and not be afraid of this religion to try to save the planet from it. Please, don't be among the moronic claiming that Christians have been as bad and the Bible is worse, because neither is true. Nor Are they a rational defense for what we've read? Moreover, I'm unique among men in this regard, since I'm universally opposed to religion, and I have written 35 books which prove that they are unworthy, including 5 that denounce Christianity, 3 that denounce Judaism, in addition to these 5 that denounce Islam, all while pronouncing the existence of Yahweh and translating in an amplified fashion his testimony from the oldest extant sources, including the Dead Sea Scrolls, so that you might actually know who he is, what he is offering, and what he expects in return. And by this point in Goddamn Religion, the reader is 2,000 pages into the most comprehensive excoriation of the Islamic religion ever written. It has been based entirely on what Muhammad, Allah, and their initial gang of Muslims said and did, as recorded in the Quran and Sunnah, the Sirah, the Tariq, Bukhari, and Muslim. I have taken the founders of Islam to task for their words and deeds, holding them accountable for the sake of all mankind, but especially the people of the book, God's chosen, Yehudim, Jews. Now keep in mind, on this day, Muslims were mutilating and murdering the closest thing to a Palestinian. These Arab merchants were headed back home to Petra, which was situated in the Palestinian homeland of Jordan, between the Wadi Musa and the Israeli border. And as we have witnessed in Gaza, Muslims don't much care if they are cannibalizing their own, ravaging Arabs, murdering Christians, abusing liberal secularists, are trying to annihilate Jews. In this regard, there is an interesting and seldom discussed anomaly among the civilian victims of the Islamic terrorist assault on 10/7/23. Of the 888 civilians killed that day, in addition to the 382 soldiers, noting that 230 bodies were abused to the extent they are unidentifiable, they came from kibbutzim and a rave. They were largely progressives, many of whom championed the Islamic agenda, as was the case with the majority of the 253 people who were kidnapped and abused, and their extended families who championed their release by demonizing the conservative government. I share this because Islam was, and it remains, a declaration of war against all mankind. It is an indiscriminate killer. And for progressives to march in favor of it in the streets of Europe, for the libertards that run Europe to invite more of this curse into their country, for those in England to tolerate Muslims perpetrating 80% of the rapes on their children, their daughters, is a great crime against humanity. And it is hypocritical, it is ignorant, it is irrational, it is grotesquely immoral, and they want to present themselves as compassionate when they're exactly the opposite. When one embraces, tolerates, accepts, respects a religion that promotes mass murder, mutilation, abduction, the slave trade, the dehumanizing of people, racial injustice, genocide, they cease to be moral. Al-Tabari and Ibn Ishaq both revealed, Tabari, volume 7, page 60, and Ishaq, 303. A cousin of mine and I mounted a hill from which we could overlook Badr and see who would be defeated, so that I could join in the plundering afterwards. I was pursuing one of the Meccan polytheists in order to smite him with when his head suddenly fell off. Before my sword even touched him, then I knew that someone other than me had killed him. Now, the implication is that one of Allah's angelic cavalry brigades did the dastardly deed. Since that is delusional, we are left recognizing that Muslims are unable to be accountable for their barbarism, and they're unremorseful for their savage behavior. They have lost the capacity to be human. Now, when I say Muslims have, I'm talking about the Muslims who lived with Muhammad. I'm talking about Muhammad and the first who practiced Islam. If Muhammad and the first who practiced Islam had Islam wrong, then there is no one in all of history that has it right. So if we assume, because it's the only rational deduction that can be made from the evidence, that Muhammad and the first Muslims had Islam right, then Islam is very, very wrong. It is that simple, folks. There's nothing more complicated to it than that, particularly when the best Muslims today follow this exact same behavior and celebrate the mutilation of children, the rape of women, and then they cut them to pieces afterwards. Then they parade around with those that they have abused as if they were trophies. They burned children alive. They abducted grandparents and then tormented them. Yeah, Muslims today, the best of them, are exactly like this. This is a religion that cannot continue to exist in proximity to other people because it is deadly, it's demonic, it's destructive. It is what it is. You know, let's stop pretending otherwise. Tabari 760, Ishaq 303. My son, I saw Muslims on the day of Badr, and I saw that one of us would wave his sword at a polytheist, and the man's head would fall from his body before the sword touched him. The sign of the angels on the day of Badr was white turbans, which trail down their backs. And on the day of Hunan, it was red turbans. The angels did not fight on any day except the Battle of Badr. On the other days, they were reinforcements. They were assistants and helpers, but they struck no blows. That isn't even consistent with Allah's testimony, where he had his killer angels many, many other places. And the fact of the matter is, they never showed up. There is no such thing as a killer angel. Angels do not decapitate men because they're enjoying a drink, song, and pretty girls. It has never happened. It will never happen. This is wholly and completely delusional. And if you were talking about this kind of spiritual being, those spiritual beings would be demons, which is why there is a Quran surah that's devoted to the jinn, which are in fact demons. They're devils. We're told that these demons and devils loved the Quran. Of course they did. Allah was chief among them. Now, Christians view angels as pretty girls with wings who encourage believers to be moral. And Muslims believe that angels are vicious beasts wielding swords, ever ready to help Muslims kidnap and kill, rape and plunder. Well, both are wrong. The differences are at least incriminating. No, it matters not if the first Muslim militants were hallucinating, or if they were the ones drinking, or if Allah's angels are really demons. It doesn't matter. Either way, Islam loses. If there were no angels, then Muhammad and his disciples were liars, in addition to being thieves and murderers. And if an angelic horde was out chopping off heads of merchants so militants could rob them, then those spiritual beings would be demons. I mean, it's lose-lose. It doesn't get any less complicated than this. I realize I am talking at a time when evidence and reason no longer matter to most people because they have been indoctrinated and progressive libertard academic institutions and have lost the ability to be rational and to use evidence effectively. I realize that is the case. And so I'm not talking to the dimwits out there that are the product of today's educational systems. You're too far lost. All I have to offer you is evidence and reason, and that's not going to appeal to you. And I understand that the faithful of all religions are allergic to the truth because the truth always impugns their beliefs, and therefore they're just going to attack me personally. So I'm not talking to you either. But there is a group of people out there who are still capable of processing evidence and reason. And if you are among them, you now know how you need to respond to Islam. Now, over the 1,000 years of the Torah and prophets that they were revealed, which would be from 1447, 1448 BCE to 447, 448 BCE, between Moshe and Malachi, and the 14 billion years of time that they cover from creation to recreation, Malak, which is not angels, but a spiritual being, caused men to die on two occasions. Both were self-defense, and no one got rich or gloated. No heads were decapitated. In Mitzrayim, the crucibles of religious and political oppression, the Egyptians lost their firstborn sons after killing the firstborn of their Hebrew slaves so that God's people might be free. Yes, the Egyptians were perpetrating genocide, and they were killing the firstborn sons of every Hebrew. And so God said, all right, I'm going to take your sons so that my sons can be free. And the Assyrian military, which had returned to besiege Jerusalem after destroying Yisrael and enslaving her people, was thwarted by a Malak spiritual envoy, 185,000 Assyrian warriors who had camped outside Jerusalem to besiege it, were eliminated in one night and by a Malak. And the purpose of that was to protect Israel, because Hezekiah had convinced enough Yehudim within Jerusalem to get rid of all traces of everything related to any religion and to become Torah observant and celebrate Chag Matzah, Pesach Matzah, and Bukurim. Malak serve Yahweh. If you want to know how they operate and what they accomplish on behalf of the Almighty and his people, I would encourage you to read Dode's 91st Mizmor Psalm. It is presented and explained in the words volume of An Introduction to God. It's presented early because when I balked at this mission with Yahweh, when he asked me to expose and condemn Islam before we started on anything else, and I mentioned to Yahweh that no one has ever survived exposing and condemning Islam in this way, he said, well, I have an answer for that. Read the 91st Psalm. And he said, you might want to reach into your pocket. You'll find it there. I did, and there it was. And I would encourage you to read it too. I can't place it in your pocket, but I can tell you that if you want it translated correctly in an amplified fashion, you can go to An Introduction to God. where it is in the words volume, which is volume one, explained. Now, confirming that the Badar terrorist campaign was a personal vendetta, we read Tabati, volume 7, number 61, and Ishaq, 304. When the prophet had finished with the enemy, he gave orders that Abu Jahl should be found among them, should he be found among them dead. He said, O Allah, do not let him escape. For the first man who encountered Jahl yelled out, and I made him my mark. When he was within my reach, I attacked him and struck him a blow which severed his foot and half of his leg. By Allah, when I flew off, I could only compare it to a date stone which flies out of a crusher when it is struck. When Jahl's son hit me on the shoulder and he cut off my arm, it dangled by my side from a piece of skin. The fighting prevented me from reaching him after that. I fought the whole day, dragging my arm behind me. When it began to hurt me, I put my foot on it, and I stood on it, and I pulled it off. You know, if this man were protecting his family from a pack of hungry wolves, if he was protecting his family from Muslims and fighting with a dangling arm and ultimately pulling it off and continuing to fight would be compassionate and courageous. But he wasn't doing that. There were no one here to protect. He was the aggressor. He was the killing wolf. And he was hungry for blood. And so when someone fights on and to this extent, which, by the way, it would be impossible if your arm fell off, the bleeding in the artery, you would rob you of blood. So it's physically not possible. So he is, in fact, hallucinating. The story is not true, but nothing in Islam is true. Then what you're dealing with is a religion so sadistic that it thrives on carnage, that the highest right in this religion is to kill. To enjoy the thought of severing someone's foot and half of their leg such that you could compare it to a date stone which flies out of a crusher when it is struck. Well, consider the introduction and the motivation required, indoctrination, really, for such devotion. And contemplate how the same prophet and doctrine arose, the same hateful passions today, passions capable of genocide, of subjugation through terrorism. And then while perpetrating genocide and plundering people and raping them, blaming them and accusing them of genocide. I mean, Islam is unfathomable, how evil it is, how twisted it is, how deceitful, destructive, and deadly, and demonic it is. This is world subjugation through terrorism, making women property, depriving them of everything, and of eliminating all forms of freedom and life. Not only is it tolerated, this disease is being brought into our home. And it's being coddled there. And it's being supported by progressive libertards. No. Islam is not to be trifled with. It is never to be excused. It is a doctrine capable of motivating men and women to die butchering innocent people for the cause. It's far worse than bending to Nazism. It's like encouraging the Wuhan Institute of virology to enhance the efficacy of a blended concoction of leprosy, bubonic plague, smallpox, polio, Ebola, HIV, and COVID, and then to spread it amongst humankind. Tabati 761 and Eshock 304. Then Muhawith passed by Abu Jahl, who was now crippled. He was lying there helpless. He hit him until he could no longer move, leaving Jahl gasping for his last breath. But then I saw Muhawith was killed. Abd Allah bin Ma'ud passed by Jahl right when the messenger ordered us to search among the corpses. The prophet said, if you cannot identify him, then look for the mark of a wound on his knee, for I jostled against him when we were boys. I pushed him so hard that he fell and he scratched one of his knees. Translated, I may be a cowardly, slithering snake of a man now, but I wasn't always this big a weasel. That's your prophet, Muslims. And oh, by the way, this idea of continuing to whack at a man who was incapacitated and could not move is exactly the reason I wanted people to watch the unedited film of 10/7/23. In one of those scenes, again, content warning, there is a Muslim civilian. He's not Hamas. He's not even Islamic Jihad. He's just in jeans. He's picked up a garden hoe, and there's a Jewish man who has been shot in the stomach, and he's laying on the ground. He's blood's draining out of his body. He is most likely going to die there. And rather than just allowing him to die from this Islamic terrorist raid in some degree of dignity, this Muslim picks up a hoe. And while screaming Allah Akbar, he routinely whacked this man on the head and on the neck. And you can see the man, his arms will move, and he'll try to see if he could push himself into a corner out of the way to avoid the next blow. And this man continues to scream Allahu Akbar as he brings this hoe down upon his neck and his head. The kind of religion that is capable of motivating that kind of butchery, savagery, demonic behavior cannot be tolerated. And it's the exact same religion that we say play out in these words. It is not a corruption of Islam. It is the truest form of Islam to be deadly and demonic. Eshock 304. Abd Allah bin Musud said, I found Abu Jahl in the throes of death. I put my foot on his neck because he had grabbed me once in Mecca and had hurt me. I said, has Allah disgraced you and put you to shame, O enemy of Allah? In what way has he disgraced me? He asked. Am I nothing more important than a man whom you have killed? Tell me, to whom is the victory? I said, to Allah and his messenger. No, to Allah. And Muhammad was the shame. This is a victory of a death cult. And the ultimate victory here ought to be to the truth, to compassion, to morality, to reason. And these words ought to ring out in people's minds that still have a degree of character, a functioning conscience. And they should cause us to say no more to this. We have to quarantine Islam. We must expose it. We must condemn it. We must prevent Muslims from doing this ever again. I mean, this is sobering. The first Muslims were gruesome. They were savage. Almost to the extent of the Muslims who abused Jews on 10/7/23. In the annals of human history, these acts are unprecedented in their sadistic savagery. Muhammad's militants inanely blamed their victims. They were not as, well, I bet they were. They were every bit as deluded as today's Muslims, who, after massacring Jews, as if they were, acted as if they were entitled and righteous. Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 298, Abu Jahl said, "You should not be proud that you have killed me." He was right, as were all of the Quraysh who renounced this demonic death cult. It was the Muslims who had disgraced themselves right from the beginning. And in this case, a few hundred militants had gone out to rob some merchants. And yet their ungod and nonprofit used the occasion to declare their supremacy, as if the value of a man lies in his capacity for evil. And that, my friends, is one of the most important stories I can share with you. Humans individually have the potential for good and bad. But humans, when grouped together, as in the case of Islam in particular, are always evil. The larger the institution, the more evil it typically becomes. Islam is the ultimate example of gang mentality, where no one took responsibility, and the worst among men became the dominant influence. The most outspoken critic of Islam, Abu Jahl, told the truth. To be proud of chasing down and killing civilians to rob them is asinine. Ishaq 304, Tabari 7, page 62. "I cut off Abu Jahl's head, and I brought it to the messenger. I said, 'Oh, Allah's prophet, this is the head of the enemy of Allah.'" He was the enemy of Allah because he was sufficiently wise to reject the prospect of Satan pretending to be God. As a result, he lost his life, but not his soul. Ishaq 304 and Tabari 762. Muhammad said, "Is this so? By Allah, then, whom there is no other deity?" This used to be the messenger's oath. The vengeful Muhammad was no more articulate than his God. "I said, 'Yes.' Then I threw down his head before the prophet's feet, and he said, 'Praise be to Allah.'" Well, Gandhi, this man was not. Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 572. "O Muslims, take not my enemies as friends, offering them kindness when they reject Allah, the prophet, and his Quran. And whoever does that, then indeed he has gone astray. You have come out to fight in my cause, seeking my acceptance. So do not be friendly with them, even in secret." Quran, Surah 60, verse 1. Should there be a more insecure, intolerant, immoral, and inept wannabe God? I hope he stays hidden in his God-forsaken hole. Ishaq 305, Ukkasa fought until he broke his sword. He came to the apostle, who gave him a wooden cudgel, telling him to go out and fight some more with that. He brandished it and became a brilliant warrior with this weapon. Allah gave him victory while he wielded it. He took that weapon with him to every raid he fought with Allah's apostle until he was killed in the rebellion, which is the war of compulsion, when all Arabs were forced into Islam under the penalty of death. These were his dying words. "What do you think about when you kill people? Are these not men just because they are not Muslims?" I'm going to conclude this program at this point. And We will continue with Muhammad's Criminal Enterprise, Part 6, in our next episode. We will arrive at the Quran's 8th Surah, which was written to commemorate this occasion. It is one of the most despicable pieces of literature ever written. And I want people, all of those who have access to YouTube, to X, to Facebook, to Rumble, to know the truth about Islam, what it really is, how it begun, what Muhammad said and did, what Allah claimed, what's in the Quran, what's in the Hadith, how the first Muslims acted. Because until we come to know this information, men and women aren't capable of being moral. They can't be compassionate, and they can't make intelligent decisions. I thank you for listening. This has been a special episode of the Iowa Blog, and I am your host, Craig Wynn.